Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to TechEd 2012. My name is Javed Tufel. I'm going to be presenting the voice deep dive on dial plan deep dive. So I don't know how many of you were on that Phoenix to Orlando flight yesterday, but that was fun getting here. So it was like we had to spend 4 hours, the time we were supposed to be here, we spent it in Phoenix Airport anyways, while they were trying to find another A321. We'll go through the link deep dive, and we'll talk about dial plans and voice management. Cornel Bullens is my colleague. This is not Cornel Bullens. Cornel Bullens will be delivering the same deck in TechEd Europe. Our session objectives are we're going to describe voice routing and how it works in the Microsoft Link Server 2010. And we'll identify the numbering plan and the approach that it takes for routing, voice routing. And then in the end, we'll look into some of the best practices and some special considerations. So pretty much the agenda over here, we'll start off with the voice routing, and we'll talk about numbering plans, and then we'll discuss the best practices at the end, and we'll just do a recap at of our session. A bit of introduction about myself. My name is Javed Tufel. I'm based in California, Northern California to be precise. And I've been working in voice, IP telephony, voice, and unified communications for the last 12, 13 years. In my past life, I used to do some unified communications design and deployments for Cisco. But now I've changed teams. So I'm on the I'm on the Microsoft, and we're working on. I work with the Microsoft Consulting Services Center of Excellence, Voice Center of Excellence. I'll let my colleague here introduce himself, Brian.
Yeah, my name is Brian Ice. I also work with Javed in the MCS Voice COE. I'm a certified master on Link Server 2010. I also live in California, but I'm in Southern California. And I've been working in voice and Microsoft spaces for about 14 years now. So I'm here to help Javed out with this session as he needs it. And then for those of you that are game for it, you can stick around for the session after this one is my Edge deep dive session. So we'll have some fun there.
So I did good thing I brought my mentor with me over here. So, so before we get into the nitty-gritty details of our dial plan and voice routing, I just wanted to set the stage up and just want you to walk you through some of the vocabulary that we would be using during our session. So the outbound call, when we say an outbound call, what we mean is a call initiated by a user, a link user, precisely. So the call could be, it's an outbound call from a link perspective if it is going to another link user, or if it's going to any other legacy PBX, they wouldn't know, but it's an outbound call for them. A PSTN call is referred to any call that is leaving the link system. Now, a PSTN call would most definitely, it would include any other internal PBX. So the call may not be leaving the enterprise, the organization or the enterprise. It could be going to another phone extension that is off of PBX, or it could be an IP PBX, or it could be a legacy phone, or it could also be routing out to the PSTN via SIP trunk or TDM telephony. An internal call is referred to a call between which a call that stays within the enterprise, and that call is going to be between a link user and another link user, or a link user and another legacy PBX. Then you guys probably are familiar with DID, direct inward dial. Those are the phone numbers, the direct numbers that are that are given by the PSTNs on public phones, where you can receive the calls. There are unique numbers, and you can receive those calls on. Reverse number lookup. That's a component, link component. We'll take a deeper look at what the reverse number lookup does. Basically, it is going to make a decision whether it's an internal call or it has to be handed over to for an outbound call routing, so decision on that. North American Numbering Plan, NANP, that's how the North American Numbering Plan is set up for U.S. and Canada. It's a plan where you have a country code and then your three-digit area code and then followed by a three-digit local exchange carrier code and then four-digit extension. So one and then the 10-digit numbers that we usually see in U.S. and Canada and North America. While we talked about a little bit about the vocabulary on the call side, these are some of the vocabulary on the concepts of link routing. Dial plans are meant to codify. When we say meant to codify, what we mean is that a dial plan is actually a set of ordered normalization rules. So what it does is whenever a set of dial numbers are dialed, the dial plan is going to go through those normalization rules and would convert that dial number into a standard format, whether it is going to be an E.164 format, which follows the RFC 3966. Voice policies are configured per user, and they usually contain PSTN usages, which determine what route the call is going to take place. PSTN usages are going to be pointing to the voice routes, and voice routes, again, like will make the gateway selection. We'll look more into detail into these components, and they would be more clearer to you once we get to that slide. So, scary slide, a lot of stuff over here. So before I get into detail of that, I just want to draw your attention towards that middle line, which dotted line, which talks about, so this slide is basically split into two halves. The top half explains the dialing behavior of what happens when you dial a number and how Link handles that dialing behavior, which we just mentioned, we talked about, like, codify. How do we codify? How do we take those dial numbers, and what do we do with those numbers? And the bottom half of the slide talks about routing and authorization. So once those numbers have been converted into a standard format, what do we do with those numbers? One of the important things is normally whenever you're making routing decisions, we make routing and authorization decisions based on the number that has been converted and normalized into a standard format. So we never make routing and authorization decisions based on what the dial numbers were. So I'll start off with, I'll draw your attention to the top right-hand corner of that slide where user initiates a call. So I'll walk you through what happens when a user initiates a call from the link and then how the routing decisions are made. So a link user can make a call two ways. Either they can use the dial pad to make a call, or they can, from their link menu, they can just pick a choice that is available on the link to call through the link using a SIP URI. If the call is made using the SIP URI, it is going to be a pretty straightforward call. Going from the SIP URI, it will directly go into an inbound routing call. So it is the system has determined it's an internal call. It does not need an external outbound routing or any other normalization, and it'll go directly to the inbound routing. So, and then once it hits that inbound routing, and once it hits the destination, it would obviously the destination extension rings. And based on whatever the forwarding or SIM ring or whatever the preferences have been configured on that link, they can be triggered. So a call can be a SIM ring. So if I call Brian and Brian's not available, he has SIM ring, the call would ring to his mobile phone. Or if he has forwarded the call to another extension, the call would go to that other extension. The second thing happens is, or the another way, the user can make a dial, make a call is by dial pad. So you can, the user can go initiate a call by entering the digits. So the link server is going to also understand the dial into a SIP URI as well. So once the dial pad entry has been received, or the dial digits have been received, then the link is going to ask a question whether it is an emergency call or not. That's the first question that this flow is going to determine. If it is an emergency call, so based on there, you would, in a link configuration, you would configure, for North America, you would configure 911 sort of extension as an emergency number, as an emergency number. So if it matches that, it would take directly, it would bypass the reverse number lookup, and it would take that call directly to your location policy, where you've already configured a PSTN usage for that emergency number to take it to a particular gateway and out, or to a SIP trunk, which could be your E911 SIP call service provider, who is going to provide you the E911 services. So if it's an emergency call, it detects that it's an emergency call, goes to location policy, picks up the PSTN usage, and routes the call to that E911 service. However, if it's not an emergency call, it would ask the second question: is it a global number or not? So what do we mean by global number? Again, global number, by when we talk about global number, we want the numbers to be in a standard format. That's why we have the dial plans, which does all the normalization rules. But once, if it is not a global number, the user could be dialing a 4-digit extension, could be dialing a 5-digit extension, whatever the extensions have been configured in your enterprise network. So if it's not a global number, then as the arrow points, it'll go to that yellow box, which is the dial plan component. This is in a link. A dial plan component is a set of, it's an ordered set of normalization rules. Its normalization rules are based on regular expressions. So it's going to go through, pick these numbers and go through those rules that you have set up and see if it matches those digits that have been dialed, matches one of those rules. The normalization rules, what they're going to do is they're going to take the digits and convert them to an E.64 number, E.164 number, a standard format. If it matches either it converts them into an E.164 number, it matches that and converts them into E.64 number. If it is not, if it is not a number string that has been configured to go through normalization rules, then it would pick to see whether it's a call park orbit range. When we talk about call park orbit range, call park range, most of us familiar with, is where you can park a call. You can define, those are non-DID numbers, where you can define where to park a call and can be retrieved. For example, for a department or at a store, you can send the call for a certain section of that store, and then they can park the call, and some other agent, whoever is available, can retrieve that call. So it'll go and look for that call, if that number is within that call park orbit range. If it is, then it'll go to the reverse number lookup. Now, other thing at the global diamond, you're seeing that if it turns out to be a global number, which is if it's a standard number, then it'll go to the reverse number lookup. The reverse number lookup can determine whether it's an internal number or it's an external number. So the RNL, the reverse number lookup component, if it determines that it is an internal number, then it'll follow that match line on the same way as it did on the SIP URI, and it'll take it to the inbound routing. And it will take you to your PSTN fallback for that CAC. So the PSTN fallback or CAC and network outages that we describe over here is when a call goes over to another user, it is quite possible that that user may not be available. So I dialed the global number. It got determined that it's a global number. The reverse number lookup said, okay, it's a number that it's an internal to the organization, internal to the enterprise. It goes, finds a match, and sends it to the inbound routing. And the number gets dialed to, for example, to Brian. But when I'm trying to reach Brian, I may be hitting either my call admission control parameters, where it's not allowing me to make a WAN-based call to Brian, or I have a WAN outage and I have to have a reroute so that I can call Brian through the PSTN. So that's a decision that would be made right at that instance, at that point. Whether we have PSTN, obviously we would have PSTN fallback configured or caller admission or any network outages. Now, when we talk about the global number has to be normalized, it's the link client that does the normalization. For any outbound call, the link client does the normalization of that number. For any inbound call that is coming into the link system, it is the responsibility for the link server 2010 to do the normalization based on the gateway scoping and outplan. So as I mentioned, that the standard numbers are which are compliant to 3966. The RFC 3966 states, it's a simple rule, they state that any number that starts with a plus is a E.164 unique number. So when we, link is a RFC 3966 compliant, so we set all our normalization rules at the client, and the client does all this normalization and converts that, so we are 3966 compliant. When we get to that point where the numbers have hit the dial plan and the number has to be normalized or converted into an E.164 number through translation applications or normalization rules, or if it is a number that falls in that call park orbit range, we must match that number in that range. If we do not match any of these number, if it does not match any of the normalization rules or any of the number, then what we're going to have is we're going to send a 404 no matching rule, and the call is not going to go anywhere. It's going to get fast busy. So once a number has been gone through the normalization rule, or has been determined as a call park orbit range number, it would be handed over to reverse number lookup. As I mentioned, reverse number lookup is going to determine whether it is an internal number or it's an external number. So how does it do it? It checks two things in the Active Directory attributes. First thing is MSRTC SIP line attribute, which is an attribute that is associated with the primary line of the user number, and then the second one is if they have a private line configured or a secondary line configured, then it would look for that MSRTC SIP private line attribute. If it determines that number, if it matches that attribute, that our reverse number lookup is going to make a decision that it is an internal number. So then it would route the call again to the right-hand side, match it as a SIP URI, and send the call over to inbound routing. If that number has not been identified as an internal extension or an internal number to the enterprise, then it is going to do two things. It's going to look for the vacant number range, and second thing is it's going to check for call park orbit range numbers. So the vacant number range, is a way where Link 2010 allows you to configure a set of numbers, a set of DIDs, and then provision them as the users become available. So you can have a whole set of DID numbers. You can set aside or configure them as vacant number each, and those would be unassigned numbers. And then you can just, block by block, you can provision those numbers to the users. So if it is, first thing it's going to do, it's going to try to find out if it's a vacant number, if it matches a vacant number range. If it does not, then it's going to check if it matches the call park orbit range. If it matches either one of those, it can go to either announcement or at the Exchange UM that you may have configured, or it'll go to the call park application where it'll park the call at that number where you want to. If it does not match any of these, so the vacant number range has not been matched and the call park orbit range has not been matched, then what it'll do is it'll go to check the voice policy. So voice policies are configured on per user, per group basis. They contain a set of PSTN usages, and they decide whether whether the user is capable or allowed to make that outbound call or not. So, based on it is quite possible that I tried to make a call. So the call that I made, the numbers got normalized. The link determined it's an outbound call. The reverse number lookup sent it to outbound routing, and then now my voice policy is the last check that it's going to go through. So am I allowed to make that call? I'm dialing an international number. The number is valid, but am I allowed to make that? That's what is going to be determined by the voice policy. So it could be either the voice, the call can be stopped right there if I'm not allowed, or if I am allowed, then I would have a PSTN usage, which is what the caller's intent is. PSTN usage is what a caller's intent is. Means that they want to make an international call. So if the PSTN usage is pointing to an to a route, which is again pointing to a gateway. So the international call, if I'm allowed to make, it would go through the PSTN usage, go through the route, and would pick up a gateway and send the call out to that selected gateway. Again, when the call has to go out to the selected gateway, and we'll talk about more a little bit more in detail at a few slides ahead, the number has to be converted into a format that is acceptable to PSTN or to public network. Right? For example, they don't like plus, or they don't like the extension semicolon extension number at the appended at the end of the SIP URI. So we may want to delete those, or we may want to take those off and send the number as it is. So we'd have to convert that. That conversion happens at the gateway level, and sends a call out. So that's basically briefly. This is a flow for a call that is coming into. For a call that is actually a link user has initiated, how it flows through the link system and picks up a route going through any gateway. For an inbound call, as I mentioned, for an inbound call, the gateway, again, the normalization does happen, but the link server 2010 is going to do the normalization, and it's going, based on the gateway dial plan scope, it is going to make a decision how to route that call. But it's not very dissimilar than an outbound call. So RFC 3966 impact to link. As I mentioned, RFC 3966 states that your number standard format should start with a plus, and it should have if a number does not start with a plus, and it actually gives you a specific format how the number should appear or how you should configure your users with that number. So some of the examples are a telephony URI in the SIP. Telephony URI should be colon plus and then followed by the country code and the area code and the number format. Second example for that would be telephony colon plus in the area code followed by a semicolon extension and the last few digits of the extension. So it is possible that those last few digits may match the base number's last digits or may not match that. The third way the RFC specifies that the acceptable number format is when you have to define a context to that number. It does not have to be, if it is an internal extension, you can still go ahead and define it as telephony colon 121, but you have to define a context so that it can find that, it can determine whether it's an internal number or not. So you can define it's a phone context, it's an HQ phone, HQ extension. When you're assigning numbers, whenever you're running a pilot you're starting a project, you want to know how you're going to start the pilot project, whether it's advisable to, or what's more preferable. You want to use the current set of users and use them as in your pilot study, or you want to set aside a certain set of blocks, block of numbers that you would run your pilot. So a recommended way is to just go ahead and look for a DID range that is not being used currently, or it's not current users, and then configure those users for, or set them up for a pilot setup with link. In that kind of scenario, where you have provisioned new DIDs for users for the link pilot, but they have their old DIDs also, which could be a legacy PBX phone, or which could be the phone numbers that you have printed on your business card. A call coming into those numbers, the way you can handle this is a call coming into those numbers, you can have that call forwarded to your the link pilot project that you have, so that the call rings to their and they're able to receive the calls on their link line. And if they want to use the legacy system to make outbound calls, they can still do so. And it's helpful if you've set a pilot like that, it's helpful that you can migrate those numbers whenever you're ready to migrate them. You can just migrate the whole block into the link environment. One of the things that we do recommend is we talked about the RFC's example, how it tell URIs are acceptable formats. We do recommend that line URI should be in the format of tel colon plus and then the extension base number, the area code and the full E.164 number, followed by colon extension equals 121. Where it is useful is in the web dial conferencing scenarios where you have, where it shows, it allows you to, the PIN number that you specify, which becomes an extension number as well, that is acceptable, that is used for authenticating on devices, especially. So it is advisable to do your telephony URI like that. From a reverse number lookup, it's not necessary to have it that way because it can still find numbers based on the context that you've defined. But we do recommend that you do it with the telephony colon plus and then the base number. The last point when we talk about that we may need to take care of that semicolon extension, we talk about that in a later slide, but at the trunk configuration or trunk normalization point where we are sending the call out to the PSTN or to a public network, we do want to just take that out. And there is a small commandlet that you can do that. You can achieve that. So for users that do not have a DID or for numbers that are not DID numbers, how should you deal with those? What we can do, and because we are recommending that you define all the numbers for the tel URI, so for those numbers, what we can do is, what we recommend is you can pick up a base number. For example, in this case, it's 1-425-882-8080. This could be the general number, which is a general number for the company, which is handled by the receptionist. So you can utilize that number and use that as a base number and then define the extension as 5185. The one thing to remember is once you utilize that number as a base number for defining an extension, anytime you create an object, contact object, you would have to make sure that you, and anytime wherever you use that number again, you'd have to define it, you'd have to keep that in the same format where you'd have to define an extension. You can either define, if there is no valid extension, you can just define a dummy extension as well, like extension equals one. There's a normalization rule that you can change those numbers through that. When we talk about phone number fragments, what do we mean by phone number fragments? The way I'm trying to describe phone number fragments is when you do not receive a full number. what happens when you receive a subset of numbers or just a few numbers that have been dialed by some users. What are the scenarios when you see a few numbers that the link system receives? So there are a few scenarios where a user can pick up the dial pad and dial a few numbers and they have not dialed a complete number. What happens to those numbers? Or in a scenario where people have dialed numbers or they have in their Outlook contacts, they have a certain set of numbers for their contacts, and then they have the same numbers which are on their mobile phones as well. So for internal numbers, they may have 9 as an external access code defined in that, but on their mobile phone, it's not. So how do we handle those? So that requires that we need to make sure that our normalization occurs properly under the normalization rules. We make sure that the access prefix that we are going to use for external numbers, we properly define those. We usually take that external number out, external access number out. In some scenarios, Exchange UM also can dial some fragmented phone numbers as well. In the Active Directory, it's not very uncommon, actually, to find in the address book and Active Directory the numbers in a really different format that is not completely standard at all. So you would have to have some normalization done on the Active Directory service book, Active Directory book service application, and then requires an address book normalization on that so that the numbers that have been configured are in a standard format. And for gateways and PBX, for calls coming in inbound to the mediation server, again, we would need normalization by the link server 2010. And for remote call control. So remote call control is in a scenario where you would see where you have a link set up and you have your internal PBX system as well. And a call comes from the internal PBX, and the internal PBX system is going to inform the link server that a call is waiting for you. So it is done through, it's more of a signaling setup. And the signaling is conveyed to the link via CSTA. So in those cases as well, it would require an address book normalization.
I think a key component to see from a summarization standpoint on the last slide in this slide is no matter when you get fragments, normalization rules are always the answer, right? It's just a matter of where are those normalization rules, right? Because the normalization rules can be in the dial plan, as you saw in the slide, right? The dial plan can be assigned to an individual user, can be assigned to the entire link site. It can be assigned directly to a pool, in this case, a mediation server pool, right? So when we get fragments, wherever they come from, normalization is the key. The key of these last two slides is just understanding there's a couple of different places where we do normalization inside of link. So we have to pay special attention to. Sometimes it's done in the link control panel in dial plans. Sometimes it's done in text files, as Javed's going to show you with like company phone number normalization rule.txt. So just a couple things to keep in mind with the fragment slide.
So dial plans, as we mentioned earlier, set of normalization, ordered set of normalization rules. And normalization rules are based, are made up of regular expressions. This is just a small example of regex. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the regex. People have written books on regex. These are .NET expressions, very powerful expressions. You can manipulate, change, you can do all kinds of black magic with the regex, right? So in this scenario, this is just a small example of how regex expressions or regular expressions work with a caret sign, starting match of match start digits that are followed. You can define the range 1.5. It's 1 through 5, or you can define it other ways as well. So for normalization examples, again, it's the same way. What we're showing over here is the national dialing. So if you're going to set up a pattern for national dialing, if this is the pattern that it is going to look up what and match against the number that has been dialed, we need to set up the regular expressions that way. For example, in this scenario, what it's stating over here is any number starting, the first number of that dial string could be any number from 2 to 9, followed by a couple of digits, and then another range of 2 to 9, and then followed by another 6 digits. So you can take that regular expression and then use that regular expression to normalize that and add and stick a plus 1 on that to convert that into a standard format. Again, similar scenario when you're trying to dial an international call. When we dial an international call from the U.S., we dial 0, and then followed by whatever the number is, 011, actually. So in this case, this is a call going to the U.K., so it's been converted or standardized to dial U.K. numbers. For extension range, so in scenarios where you have to define extension range, for example, in this scenario, it's 1500 to 3500. It would have been nice to just say 15-1500-3500, but that's not how it's going to work. So you have to split it in three ways. Like the extension range is from 1 through, because it's 1500 to 1999. So that's how you define the first set, then followed by from 20 to 299. So that's 0 through 9. It carries all the way to the end. And then you take that regular expression, and then again you stick a plus 1 in front of it, and then your area code, and the extension, and then you can normalize that number. Normally we try to avoid numbers that are starting with 9 and followed by any number, because usually it can be confusing with especially if you have set up a extension with a 9 or access code in the 9, and your internal extensions are with a 9 as well. So try to avoid an overlapping of extension numbers.
Yeah, and for those of you that look at this slide and kind of go, oh my, the cool thing about Link is you don't have to build these regular expressions yourself from scratch. Right, we have a wizard that's going to take you through building these regular expressions at a very basic level. You can certainly then take that and make them more complicated if you so desire, but you're not going to be given like a blank notepad and have at it. Right? We actually have a nice wizard that's going to step you through it. And that last bullet point, that's a valid regular expression, but the way that the translation app works on Link server, there's some optimizations that have been done that actually cause that to misbehave, if you will. So that's why we tend to recommend not doing that, even though it's a valid regular expression.
So what Brian mentioned is a really cool feature, like in the Link. Well, you don't have to, as he mentioned, you don't have to build these regular expressions. The builder allows you to do that. And for people like me, it would be easy. For Brian, he would go into the command channel and build regular expressions by himself. So
I don't get out much.
Yeah. So, what was that? Okay, thanks. So, off-hook dialing. What we mean by off-hook dialing is when. So, there are a couple ways you can dial. You can on a Link. You can type in your numbers in the search pad, directly copy paste it, and then just hit the dial. That way, the entire string is dialed. However, in a scenario where you are using when you go off-hook, or you're using a device, attached device to the Link. And you go off hook or using speakerphone, and you're trying to dial. In that scenario, the interdigit timeout that we have is usually 1.5 seconds. So in 1.5 seconds, if you've started dialing the digits and you've given a gap of 1.5 seconds between two digits, the system's going to think that you're done dialing, and it would start to match up the normalization rules, see if it is the number that has been dialed. Does it has a match for that? It's going to wait for another 10-second final timeout before it does that. And if no matching rule is found, then it is then the dial string is sent to the FE. For external access prefix in the Link, when you're defining the users. And when you're defining the user, the numbers, you can define. There is a parameter where you can define 9 and define that as a external access prefix. Also, when for a number, you can define for a dial string or the extension number that you have internal, you can mark that as an internal extension or it's an external number. So for example, if it is an external, in a scenario where you have defined an access prefix, for example, 9, but then when the logic starts and a number is dialed, what the logic is going to do is it's going to strip the 9 and look for that number if that number is an internal number, or for external number, which is not marked as an internal number. If it does not find a match, then it appends the 9 into it and tries to see if it matches an external number. If it does not match an external number either, then it just still keeps the 9 and finds and looks through the entire range of numbers whether it matches any numbers at all. So that's how external access prefix works. You have to for internal numbers, you can go and mark them as internal numbers through a checkbox.
This is a scenario that you'll often run into with the phone edition devices, the Aries devices or the Tanjay device, specifically with this off-hook dialing, right? And for those of you that aren't familiar, off-hook dialing means that when you press the speakerphone, you get dial tone, right? That's off-hook dialing, right? Whereas I can just start typing in a number, and I don't get anything until I hit enter in the link client, and then it goes off-hook, and I get, you know, the number dialed. This is specifically to be able to counteract the fact where I might hit speakerphone and start typing in some numbers, and I'm just not quite done typing yet, and it suddenly matches a normalization rule that I didn't want it to match, and it turns what I wanted to be an internal call into an external call to a number that's not accurate, right? So this is all about being able to tell the system, look, if they dial it with a 9 first, that would be an outside line that they're looking for. So don't bother matching any of my normalization rules that are tagged for internal numbers, because I don't need to worry about that. They dialed 9, that's our external access prefix. We're assuming they meant to dial externally. For some reason that doesn't work, well then we'll fall back and we'll sift through and go, well maybe they really did mean to dial internal. And if that doesn't work, then we'll just kind of, you know, give them an error on the phone. So that's really the purpose of this. If you don't have clients that use the physical phone devices, you're not likely to run into this scenario.
So address book normalization, in order for us to normalize all the address book in numbers into a standard format, there's a text file that you can use. It has to be configured, and in the Link 2010, it was available. Also, you had to do that in the OCS 2007 R2 as well. But in this scenario, also, we have to make sure that we utilize this file to normalize the address book numbers. Now we're going to take a look at routing and authorization. So before we go into routing and authorization, we want to know, like, why do we want to do routing, and what is the basis of our authorization? So essentially, when we are sending a call, we have two ways to make a call from one end to another, from one endpoint to another endpoint. Either we can use a PSTN or we can use a WAN calls. PSTN calls are expensive. It takes for you to make an international call, even if it's the same company from here to London, it's going to cost money. So why not use the bandwidth WAN provision that you have available and use that to make calls? So that's why what we're going to do is we're going to try to utilize our available infrastructure and send the calls over to internal calls, keep the internal calls, enterprise calls across the WAN as much as possible. So this is a routing and authorization slide. And what it defines is like three major components that are involved in routing and authorization scenarios. So you would have voice policies, you have PSTN usages, and you have routes. Each one of these components serves as its own distinct purpose, and it relies on relies on the other component to make that all that happen. Voice policies basically are configured per user, per group, and determines what the user is allowed to call. It's more of a class of service. Am I allowed to dial local or long-distance calls? Am I allowed to call international calls or not? That's the purpose of the voice policies. And so voice policies contain a set of PSTN usages. When we talk about PSTN usages, we're talking about the intent of the caller. And And also the calling location, where strategically you're, where do you want the call to go from? Either if you have a user in Seattle and you have a user in London, whether you want the calls to go out from Seattle or you want the calls to go out from London, based on that. And priority as well. You know, a PSTN usage can define, like you may have routes. The routes, so PSTN usage may have routes, and in that PSTN usage, you can define priority as well. You want to pick that route. If a Seattle user wants to make a call, the priority for that should be the Seattle gateway. If that Seattle gateway is not available, then it would fall. It would roll over to that second priority that is available. So we can configure those priority levels at the PSTN usage level. With the routes. Routes are going to point us to the gateways that are going to take the call out to the PSTN. And obviously, it's all dependent on which gateway are we going to use, which is going to be our most cost-effective gateway. And this is kind of a layered approach. You can, once you set this up, obviously, when you start building this up, you would have, in a very, very, very simplistic case, you would have a voice policy pointing to one PSTN usage, pointing to a route. But as you build on this, as I mentioned, it's layered approach. As you build on this, you can create more routes, associate to a PSTN usages, and then associate to voice policies. As we look at, if I add another route, and then I associate to a PSTN usage, then suddenly this my voice policy that is associated to those PSTN usages, those routes become available to those voice policies. So they can make use of those routes to make calls outside. If I go ahead and create a new voice policy, if I create a new voice policy, I already have these PSTN usages, and I already have these routes created. All I have to do is point to that PSTN usage. And if I point it to that PSTN usage, that means all the routes that are pointing from by that PSTN usage, they become available to that voice policy. Similarly, you know, and so it's easy to build upon that.
Real quick on that last slide, mm-hmm. Another component to not lose sight of on the voice policy perspective is, in addition to the routing aspects, which we're focused on here in this discussion, voice policies also control feature sets that are available to the client. Right. So are they able to do call forwarding? Can they do simul ring? Can they do call park? Can they do malicious call trace? Right, and that's going to come into play when you start looking at common area devices, as an example, where I have a lobby phone, and I don't want that lobby phone to be able to do sim ring, or I don't need that lobby phone to be able to park a call. So we can build respective policies for these different classes of devices, and then in turn, associate the respective PSTN usages so that we can control that class of service and class of restriction. So someone doesn't come in your lobby and sit down and start making international phone calls.
Right. And we have actually a screenshot of a voice policy that talks about all these features that Brian just mentioned. Some of the observations that we see from the field when people are trying to configure numbers, some of the things that they overlook, and then that can cause real problems when in call routing. 9 is, as we know, is often used as a trunk access code. So you may we have seen, and people may want to make a standard format number, starting with +9, and then using an internal number or like a North American numbering plan, like using the area code 1 and then 212. It can easily be confused with +91 becomes an area country code for India. So it would mess up the routing for that. It'll get routed to India. It won't get routed to 212 area code, I think it's Southern California. So again, in private extensions, just by sticking a plus in front of the private extension does not make it an E.164 number. Again, it would take that +6046 as a number that needs to go out to Malaysia, because that's the country code for that. If you do not put the country code in it, again, it would get construed, or it would be misinterpreted as to another country code. It would take up as another country code and then would be more problematic in call routing. So again, the solution is make sure that in E.164 number, full number is it's a globally unique number. Full number is defined in a standard format, which is compliant to RFC 3966. And as we talk about, if it is recommended to have a semicolon extension equals and then define the extension number for that. And it is very useful for conference pin and then pin resolver issues. Dial plan approach, whenever you're building your dial plan, you're starting with the routes. These are the building blocks. You start with the routes, you build your voice policies, and then you link your, then you build your PSTN usages and link them to appropriate voice policies. That's how the three component slide that we saw, how you build your voice policies and PSTN usages and routes. That'll help you build that dial plan up. So this is a simple example of whenever you're building a dial plan, you want to define what is going to be a local call versus an internal call versus a local call versus in long distance international and any premium number calls. So you can define categories, and then based on that you can define your normalization rules that this is how you want to handle this call. These calls. So in a scenario, this is an example that we put together. You can define, so it gives you five levels. You can have more or you can have less based on what your call routing is set up for. So internal, we know it's Germany, Munich. It starts with the country code is 49 and then followed by the number. Or if it's a local number, 49 and 89, and then the rest of the number. So if you want all calls for Europe to go out from this gateway, from this using this dial plan, a routing plan, you can define all these country codes for different European countries here. And for international, if it's any number in a standard format, that can go out from that. So this is okay in a similar scenario in the US and North America as well. But there's a little tricky situation that we have in North America is we have, I don't know, I mean, how many are there in Southern California? Like 9 or 10 or 12 area codes? Yeah. So you may be, and some of the area codes, if you're in a 408 or 949 area code, you can be in an area code in, you can be dialing in the same area code, but it's considered as a long distance or a long distance call. And you could be dialing into a different area code, and it's not considered as a long-distance call because of proximity or local exchange carrier, and it's a second exchange carrier. So that's where it becomes very tricky to identify which calls are local calls and which calls are long-distance calls. And it can, and I'm going to give you an exaggerated example.
I like it.
Yeah. So it can turn into something like this, right? So if you are going to start configuring something like this, you're going to end up with something like this, right? So
he started with a full head of hair when he got
yeah. Yeah, until I got to the end.
Until
of he
got
that
to this slide, right? Yeah, and he looked like that.
So in that scenario, like if you have to identify those area codes which are long distance versus local, it becomes a nightmare, basically.
The link wizard's not going to do that one for you. Sorry.
Yes. So the good thing is there is a solution. There is a link optimizer on the web. It's not supported by Microsoft, as a disclaimer, but it does help. It's a nice tool where you can identify, you can define what ranges and what numbers you want, and it would build all that for you. The nice thing about that is if there are any changes in your local areas, as far as if a number that was supposed, if a range that was, or area code that was supposed to be a free call or local call, now it has become a long distance call, you would get an email back with a revised format for that.
Yeah, this site is actually querying the local calling database, the local calling guide databases. So it's able to pull up and extrapolate out based on Lex and all that good stuff. And it's pretty close. I mean, it's not 100% accurate, but it's certainly more accurate than what we can get, say, out of the link tools themselves. So it's also a great learning exercise to go through, even if you don't necessarily take this and throw it straight into production, right? It's a great way because when you're done, this downloads as a PowerShell script. And you can get in and dig through and see what the PowerShell script is doing. It creates all the objects that you need inside of Link, all the normalization rules, all the trunk translation rules, you know, all the goodies that you would need. So, you know, obvious disclaimer, you know, use this as it's intended to be used. Don't just go out there, download it, and run it in production and go, sweet, yeah. Brian said to do it. No, I didn't. So don't do that. Okay, if you do that, my name's Cornel. Okay, so.
Yeah. Let's put it on
Cornel. But it's a good tool. Good tool to have.
Yeah.
This will work in, this particular one is North America, but in the drop-down for country, there's plenty of countries that are there. And the gentleman that runs this is very receptive to adding more countries as you email him. So when he first started with this, there were like three. I think there was North America, and then we had the UK and so forth. And it's grown to, I think there's about 20 or 30 countries on the list there.
Yep.
So if your country's not there, just ping him by email and say, hey, I want to add this, and he's great at responding to feedback.
They'll probably ask you to provide all the area codes in the world, isn't it?
Route planning details, as we talk about, these are routes are also reg expressions. You need to make sure that routes for internal numbers, they're for internal numbers, the link server is going to reroute the call based on what we receive from the inbound from the PSTNs. If there are multiple gateways, in a route, it's better to group them together and then prioritize them. But if there are, if you don't have multiple gateways and if their gateways are located in different geographic locations, then it's advisable that you create separate routes for these separate gateways. Here's a voice policy snippet. As Brian mentioned, you know, it offers you, it's configured per user basis, per group basis. And it is, right now, it's dial plan policy. It is, if you see that it is set up for automatic. When we say automatic, it means that it is going to pick up an automatic dial plan policy usage that the link specifies. What that means is, and I think it's available in the next slide, what that means is it is going to look up, if it is set for automatic, it is going to look up for if there are any user-based policies configured, and that would be the most applicable policy for that voice policy. If that's not available, then it's going to go to the pool level and the site level and the global level policy. Whatever is the nearest would be applied over here.
And that's only one policy.
Yep.
Okay, there's no, we don't like get them all together and give you an effective policy. It's just whichever one's closest to the user wins.
Here's the policy enhancement, and these are the features you were talking about where you can do call forwarding, delegation, and simultaneous ring, et cetera. You can check these. This is a snippet or a screenshot from the CMS from the link server management system. PSTN usages examples again. When you are going to define PSTN usages, if there are any calls that are going to be free, you can define a PSTN usage which is for free calls. Like all local calls in a certain location are free calls. So those can be applied to all the phones, or that those can be made available to all the users in the enterprise so that they can utilize those. Again, your PSTN usages again. We saw at the very start of that with the flowchart, we have a particular PSTN usage for emergency calls as well. And that picks up a particular PSTN usage and goes directly to emergency call. So it's in scenarios where you have to configure some backup routes. For example, if a Seattle user needs to make a call to Seattle long distance and it is going to use a PSTN usage of Seattle, it would do so. If that PSTN usage is not available, then in a fallback scenario, we still want to have that another PSTN usage available. Maybe the gateway is in LA, or maybe the gateway is in New York, somewhere else.
So based on geographic location, you can pick and choose the priority as well. We're coming over to the special consideration, best practices, few things to consider that are helpful whenever you're building your link dial plans. And we'll look at these slides one by one. It's a trunk normalization rule. Again, when we say trunk normalization rules, is when you're sending the call out to PSTN, you want the number to be in a format where the PSTN can understand that. In case you send the number in a format that PSTN does not understand that, you're going to get a fast busy or the call is not going to be acceptable to them. So, for example, in this scenario, if you're going to send a call to UK, you dial +44. 221 and then the number. So it has to be when that number, this is a number which is RFC compliant in your link system. But when the number has to go out to PSTN, it has to be in the format of 011 if it is going out from the US, from Seattle, because we dial over here as 011 to make an international call. So the North American exchange over here is not going to understand that it is not an international call if it does not come with the 011. So we need to make sure that the number starts with the 011 and goes out, if it is going out from the Seattle gateway. If it is going to be going out from a gateway in London, we do not need to dial 011. We do not need to dial even the country code as well. In UK, the numbers to dial city codes starts with zero and then the number. So you would have to create these trunk normalization rules so that if a call is going to from Seattle, it goes 011. If a call is going from the London gateway, it goes at 029.
And this speaks volumes to the fact that this is why you want to normalize to E164, right, in your link deployment. Because once the number is normalized as a global number, we can make these decisions based on whatever the last mile is, right? Whatever the last hop is going to be. So if that's going to hop off at the Seattle gateway, fantastic. At the Seattle gateway, on that trunk going to that gateway, I'll do a translation rule that makes it so that it goes out as 011. If it happens to traverse out of the London gateway, well, then I'll strip off the 44, the +44, and stick a zero in front of it and let it go its merry way, right? It helps us to provide resiliency as well. Right, maybe I want this to use least cost routing and it's going to go out the London gateway first, but the WAN connection's down, so I can't get to the London gateway. Well, instead of asking the user to dial it again, but this time dial it with 011, Link just automatically reroutes the call out the Seattle gateway, assuming they have permission to do so, and we automatically take care of sticking +011 in front of it and get it on its merry way. Right, so that speaks volumes to why we want you to standardize on E164, because it gives you this kind of flexibility.
So I have about 12 minutes. I want to see if five, 6 minutes for Q&A. So I'll just go through, again, emergency call, PSTN usage. We saw that at the start. We need to make sure that we have a specific PSTN usage. And soon as, and then when we have defined the dial string as an emergency call, soon as an user dials 911, the link system is going to understand, yes, this is an emergency call. It's been defined. I have a PSTN usage. I'll send it out to the gateway. Number blocking, you can exclude number ranges. For example, if you want to exclude some ranges, some premium numbers that you want to exclude and you do not want users to dial those numbers, you have the capability to go ahead and exclude those numbers. However, it does become, so you'd go pick and choose each number range and then exclude those, but it becomes a little difficult to manage if, for example, you forget to exclude a certain premium range number and they become available and you create a new policy and then dialing of those numbers become available to those users. So in that scenario, the alternate method is to create an unassigned number and then mark those numbers as and block all the outbound calls to those numbers, to those as unassigned numbers. That way it's sort of like foolproof that you would not first of all, you would not forget to block those premium numbers. Second thing is, that those numbers get blocked.
Trunk configuration, again, removing the plus before you hand off the call to the PBX or the SIP trunk or to the TDM trunk. There's a nice commandlet that allows you to remove that that plus sign. For PSTN rerouting, when you have scenarios in call admission control or in case of WAN outage, when you have to reroute the calls, again, you would you'd need to configure some patterns to reroute the calls.
That's specifically so that we can strip that semicolon ext equals part, because there are some gateways out there that when they see an outbound call with that, they just simply don't know what to do with it, or they process it incorrectly and they only keep what's to the right of the semicolon, which causes your call to fail. So this translation rule would be specifically in a PSTN reroute where we say, well, now we want to reach that user not by link via SIP, we want to go out via the gateway, but I've got to strip that last little bit off because the gateway doesn't understand what to do with it.
Right. Another thing is configuring users with DIDs and extensions. As we mentioned, we do recommend to have extension colon and extension equals one extension in, and the extension number. That is helpful in resolving PIN scenarios and in the web dial-in conference scenarios as well. Another best practice that we do suggest is not to include 9 as the access code. We can do as a part of the normalized phone number. So we want to make sure that the normalized phone number stays as an E.164, should not include any long distance or prefixes in it.
Sorry, so the question is, the extensions, do you configure them in link or and also in the address book service? So they're two distinct things. The address book service will replicate information out of Active Directory into link for the purposes of displaying in your address book, but has nothing to do with the user's phone number.
Yeah.
So the user's phone number would be assigned separately inside of link, and they're likely going to match, but you would have to set them separately.
But you do want to normalize those address book entries as well so that they match to what we have on the link. And for the private extensions, we do not treat them as a global extensions. Convert them into an E.164, and including country codes. So dial plan, normalization, optimization. Do you want to say something about normalization, optimization?
We've certainly done some improvements going from RTM all the way up to CU5, right, to give you the better flexibility of being able to add more dial plans and more normalization rules per dial plan. Original numbers that were tested were not bad, right, but we've had some specific use cases where we needed lots and lots and lots of normalization rules inside a dial plan. So once we got into CU5, we've bumped that number up over 100 normalization rules with minimal impact on call setup time. Right before, you could do it, but for every 100 normalization rules, there was like an additional 3 to 5 seconds of setup time for the call, and it just got unbearable to the point where you couldn't make a call.
And last but not least, whenever you build dial plans, you need to make sure that you test and validate. Make sure you run through all your normalizations. Although there are test cases and then there are test functionality that is available in the link, wherever you, for example, you run some, you create some normalization rule or you create a regular expression, for a normalization rule, you can immediately run a test. And there are test cases actually built in a lot of places where you can test it. But whenever you're done with your overall dial plan, you need to make sure you're dialing, you're rerouting, you're fallback, your call admission control, all of those functionalities that you have done, make sure you test and validate that before you extend it to the users. So in just key takeaways, we talked about like dial plans. We went through the call flow of a call initiated by a link user. You saw how it traverses different voice routing components. We looked at what's the proper format of numbering and what are the best practices and special considerations that we need to follow to make sure that all dial plans are set up properly. And with that said, that is the end of our session. There are some related content. Brian is going to do a 400-level session, which is edge media connectivity over here in 30 minutes. But there are a couple of tests that you can take. These are really good tests, link server configuration administrator test. If you want to ask questions, we'll open it up for questions. But we, Brian and myself, both would be at the Learning Center if you have more questions.
If you have any questions, if you want to make your way towards the microphones that are in the center of the room, that's where we'd like you to be for asking the questions so the recording guys can hear you.
Yes, I have one question. Is there any access to information on large-scale systems? Because some of the stuff that I see out there is not really much on design. Like, let's say I have a global organization, 20, 30,000 users with geographically dispersed sites. Is there anything out there that we can review for design? Because I'm in a position where, you know, I offer up solutions, and it'd be very helpful if I had more information on the design aspect of large-scale systems.
Sure. My favorite answer as a consultant is it depends. Because really, when you get into an engagement like that, I mean, there aren't any really well-developed example dial plans out there, right? And mostly that's because dial plans are very personalized to companies, very sensitive to companies. You also have to consider things with regards to legal ramifications, right? I mean, we talked a lot about least cost routing here, but in some companies, it's a big no-no to go across the WAN and dump calls out on London's, you know, PSTN circuit when that's a different business unit and you're racking up toll charges on their side. So unfortunately, there's no one place to go for that. For me, it's really about, there's a lot of good stuff on TechNet and there's a lot of good information in some of the training courses that we have.
Okay.
But no one central area, sorry.
Right, yeah, just a quick note, please make sure you do the evaluation whenever you're done with that. So go ahead, second question.
Yeah, we had one customer in Ohio. Now we've got up to maybe 3 to 4 customers in Ohio that, going back to what you said earlier, once they click call in the link client, that period of time from the time they click call and the call actually established is creeping up to around 8, 9, 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned dial plans. Are you making an association between the two possibly there?
From their link client?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say that that's more than likely. What you would want to check there is MRAS association between the client and Edge if they have Edge servers deployed.
Okay.
Because if call set up, if you're making the call and you're hearing the little beep,
Yep.
And that's all you're hearing. You're trying to get credentials via MRAS and trying to establish candidates. You'll learn more about that in the next session. Nice. I didn't tell him to ask that question.
No.
Okay. But that's where I would focus my attention there. Is maybe between the front end and the Edge server, port 5062 isn't open.
Okay.
And we're trying to go and get you credentials for Edge so that we can give you all your candidates, and it's just not there. So that's usually indicative of some kind of communication problem, firewall, something like that.
Okay.
Sir.
Hi. You didn't touch that, but this is for media bypass. I have media bypass set up, and I have also a subnet set up, so using a specific site, use a SNET gateway to make the call. So when they're traveling, they're not on that subnet anymore. How do I get them to connect to a different gateway, local, where they're at?
Well, remember that media bypass is all about keeping media off the WAN.
Yes.
Right? So if I go to another location, I don't want to use that same gateway.
Yeah.
As far as being able to talk to it directly. I can still use it. I just have to hairpin through a mediation server.
One reason is because you guys only support G711, which if I'm in Cisco, they can do G729 or G722.
Sure.
You guys don't support that. So
from our perspective in that regard, if I'm in a site and I have media bypass, I'm talking to the gateway, I'm doing G711, fantastic. Now I go to another site and I'm in a different subnet, which is a different site. That means that I can't do media bypass. That means I have to go through the mediation server, and now that opens up the opportunity for
That's
me to use
way.
RT Audio Narrowband, which is equivalent to G729 from a bandwidth utilization perspective. I've got more on that. I have a session tomorrow on Link in the Enterprise where I go through all of that kind of stuff.
All right, I'll meet you then.
So, okay.
Good. All right. If there are no more questions, go ahead.
One more?
Yep. You got 52 seconds.
So for users with extensions, if we've got kind of a wacky dial plan where we've got users with the same extension hiding behind different DID numbers, and they're logging into conferences, and we have multiple people trying to log in just using their extension, How does it resolve that extension conflict? Because there's nothing, I mean, you can't give two users the exact same line URI, right? But it won't check for conflicts in the same extension portion of the line URI. How does it resolve that conflict? How does it know who to log them in as?
Yeah, it's because when you authenticate from that dial-in conferencing service, it doesn't have to use that ext equals piece. It can kind of as a hint. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't work, we'll process normalization rules to see if they put in a four-digit extension. We can process server-side normalization rules to go, well, that turns into this number. That's the number that we want to match for the line URI.
Right, but if we got a screwed-up dial plan where we've got multiple, the four-digit extension.
Well, if you've got a screwed-up dial plan, then,
so,
then,
I mean, I guess my
then we need
is,
to talk online.
It lets you have multiple folks with the same four-digit
extension. Yeah, you can certainly
portion,
get into
right?
a problem scenario. Yeah.
So will it just give them the first one that it finds in the directory with that colon ext equals portion, or...
Yeah, I would either come up here afterwards, we'll chat more about it, or find us in the Learning Center, and we can go through. Take a little more than a couple minutes to answer
Thank
that
you
one.
Guys. Thank you very much for the session. Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.